Well, welcome y'all to the Third Court of Appeals. It's a pleasure to have you today. Justice Theofanis and Crump and I are pleased to have counsels, as well as we have the Leadership Academy with us today, as well as some students from St. Mary's to observe oral argument today, as well as your wonderful YouTube audience. I'm sure you've got your grandparents and spouses watching as counsels argue today. This is cause number 25442 CV Clements et al. Versus McBroom et al. If I can have counsels announce their appearance for the record, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Alexander Ross Hernandez on behalf of the appellants.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Greg Georgievic on behalf of the McBroom appellees.
All right, thank you. And counsels, my understanding is Mr. Hernandez will take 15 minutes and reserve 5 for rebuttal, and that Mr. Georgievic will do his 20 minutes on behalf of appellees. As you know, counsels, once you get to yellow, you've got two more minutes left, and red will mean you need to wrap up your thoughts, and then we'll go to the other side. So with that, Mr. Hernandez, you may proceed on behalf of the appellant.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice, Your Honors, and may it please this honorable court. Alexander Ross Hernandez on behalf of the appellants. I'm joined by my paralegal and my wife, Brianna Hernandez, as well as my two daughters and my mother and my clients, Cynthia and Lupe Gutierrez.
Oh, they decided not to watch on YouTube. We've got them here in person. Wonderful. Welcome.
Flatonia is just a hop, skip, and a jump. It's a pleasure to be back in Austin and before this honorable court. Your Honor, I'd like to begin at the forefront of this case, which is the legal standard that is applied and applicable in this matter. As Your Honors are aware, this case deals with a motion to dismiss under Texas Rule of Civil Procedure 91A. The Honorable Court of Appeals' present job is to look at the ruling de novo, fresh with a new set of eyes. So I'll skip to the legal issues, but I believe the appropriate place to start is with the standard by which this court is reviewing things. So a de novo review of Texas Rule of Civil Procedure 91A. There is some case law suggesting, and the rule in fact states verbatim, that for a court to grant a motion to dismiss under the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure, there has to be no basis in law or no basis in fact. In this matter, we're dealing with the contention raised by the appellees through their honorable defense counsel that there is no basis in law by which my clients, Lupe and Cynthia Gutierrez, Jim Clements, and Carolyn Lehman are able to present their private nuisance claim. I'll get to the case law, but just starting there.
And Mr. Hernandez, just to begin, one of their core issues begins with your pleadings and whether you've asserted a cause of action for either negligence or the like. And I believe in your reply, you cite one aspect of your pleadings that you rely on to assert a negligence claim. Is that the sole place in your pleadings that you claim you have put the appellees on notice that your clients asserted a negligence claim and not a claim for nuisance?
Great question, Your Honor. Excuse me. The answer is no. That is not the only place in the pleading, and here is why. Pursuant to the Texas Supreme Court's opinion in Crosstex, that case would, in so many words, state that the inquiry into whether or not something is a nuisance, meaning a legal injury, and Justice Boyd, writing for the court, a unanimous court in that case, very plainly stated that a private nuisance is two things. Not only is it a cause of action, much like negligence, much like tortious interference, much like intentional infliction of emotional distress, the bucket of civil claims that one can bring against someone, and I'm going to get to the question, but but just a little lead up here. A private nuisance is a type of claim, but in this instance, more importantly, to answer Your Honor's question, it is also the legal injury complained of. What is it that the plaintiff in the matter is complaining of? So the answer to Your Honor's question is absolutely not that it's not the only place in the pleading, because it's a holistic approach. In cross-text, they outline a number of factors outlined in our initial brief in which the court, or a fact finder rather, would have to assess whether or not this is an actionable private nuisance, using that term in terms of what the actual cause of action is. But separate from that, but yet still part and parcel, is the legal injury component. What are they complaining of? And if you look throughout our brief, I believe at the First Amendment petition, it's somewhere in between paragraphs 17 through 24, in which we allege the specific facts that the plaintiffs, the appellants now, are complaining of. And that runs the gamut of fear and apprehension with respect to whether or not there is going to be a depreciation in property value, fear and apprehension of thermal runaway associated with battery energy storage systems, which I'll refer to as BESS in this argument, and then apprehension and alarm with respect to their ability to continue agricultural operations. Warda is in rural Fayette County, about an hour away from here, and there are two of our plaintiffs who use their land for, among other things, watering their crops, but also to use water for their own well-being, their own drinking water, and not to mention the water for their cattle, and that is associated with the water runoff that happens
so
with the BESS.
So let me get back to my question.
Yes, ma'am.
So you're saying that nuisance is a cause of action and not a legal injury? Or are you saying something different? Because they are saying nuisance is not a cause of action. It is only a legal injury, and you have to hitch that wagon to a cause of action, and they are saying you never hitched it to a cause of action. And that's what I'm trying to understand.
Yes, Your Honor, but don't take my word for it. Let's take the Texas Supreme Court's. At cross-text 505 Southwest 3D 580 at 617 to 618, Justice Boyd writes for the unanimous Texas Supreme Court, stating, "Given the long and storied history of nuisance law, it is not surprising that the courts and the parties in this case have struggled to articulate the elements of Gardner's nuisance claim. Even the most esteemed tort commentators do not agree. We hold today that the term nuisance describes a particular legal injury involving interference with the use and enjoyment of property, but does not describe a cause of action. That a defendant can be liable for intentionally or negligently causing a condition, that constitutes a nuisance. And that neither claim requires a separate finding that the defendant unreasonably used its property when creating a nuisance." Very long run-on sentence there, but nonetheless, you have the legal injury, which is the complaint of harm. You attach that with the requisite mental state or the requisite pleading of either negligence, either intent, or either strict liability. In that together, when you combine the two, the legal injury with the requisite mental state, you then have a cause of action for...
And what did you hitch it to?
Negligence,
intent... Or strict liability?
Solely negligence.
Gotcha.
Solely negligence.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
And where did you do that in your pleading?
It was in the snippet. So the snippet directly where we pled negligence that Your Honor just referred back to at the beginning of this oral argument.
In your reply brief.
That's correct. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so
yes, ma'am.
Much.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, gotcha.
And while we're interrupting you, your stream, is your argument that... prospective nuisance should be actionable, or are you arguing that the sort of mental aggravation that's gone on for your clients already is the only nuisance?
Yes, Your Honor. I want to flip to cross-text because it's our pleading directly tracks the language that we believe that the unanimous Texas Supreme Court permitted to be actionable. But to answer the question at the forefront, it would be the complaint of legal injury. And in our case, it would be a apprehension and alarm, fear of the looming imminent BESS that just for a second, why is it looming and imminent? The defendants slash appellees presented this matter to the for a tax abatement, thus arising the necessity for us to take some type of legal action. It was projected to go into place, the BESS, in 4Q of 2025 to begin operation in 1Q of 2026. So just briefly there, for that aside, returning back to the point of what our complaint of harm is. It is in light of the silence of the county, our own county, Fayette County, to have any type of emergency response, any type of plan in place to address the known hazards associated with BESS. So once our clients got word of the BESS project through the grapevine, really, and then when they stepped in front and they tried to get a tax abatement, we were alerted to the fact of this BESS project that was going to be happening in WARDA. And so the complaint of harm was then, well, my clients were quite alarmed. They had never heard of a BESS in their life. In fact, neither had I. And we begin to try and dig around for things. And then, well, we look in the Fayette County Hazard Response Plan attached to our First Amendment petition has no addressing of thermal runaway, even combating these types of fires, which are different than wildfires. And then we started to ask around, well, what is our capability to fight these types of fires? And well, it was really crickets. There was no one in the county who actually vocalized that we had the capability, both in water, both in manpower, both in planning, to enable us to combat these hazards associated with BESS projects. So to answer your Honor's question, the answer is that our complaint of harm, we do not believe it's prospective. We believe that there have been actionable movements to push this project along, such as seeking a tax abatement, such as entering into a contract. Yes, there has as far as we know, not been a shovel in the ground, and absent flying a drone over the property or absent, jumping the fence, we would not know if there's actually been a shovel to hit the dirt. But we believe that claim, that argument is entirely inapposite in light of the clear progression of this project moving to the state where at the very least there could potentially be a shovel in the ground. So roundabout way, but ultimately getting to the same point of stating that our complaint of legal injury is as stated in cross text, which is the following. I'm reading from 505 Southwest 3D at 596. Justice Boyd, again writing for the unanimous Texas Supreme Court, states as follows. To support a claim for private nuisance, the condition the defendant causes may interfere with a wide variety of the plaintiff's interest in the use and enjoyment of their property. It may, for example, cause physical damage to the plaintiff's property, economic harm to the property's market value, harm to the plaintiff's health, and here's the key disjunctive phrase here, or psychological harm to the plaintiff's peace of mind in the use and enjoyment of their property. In that the latter part of that disjunctive phrasing, that might I also mention, not exhaustive, he said, for example, list of things is what we couched our claim for private nuisance to. And we did a little digging further into, well, what does the modern day Texas Supreme Court have to say about this issue, if anything? And we discovered a case, Huhn v. Blanchard, which we cited in our brief, as did the amicus brief of Kerr County and Gillespie County, in which Justice Busby, presently on the Texas Supreme Court, an esteemed jurist, writes in a footnote, this good little nugget, and it said footnote 54. He states in the last sentence of this, describing the state of nuisance law in 2024, he writes, courts have also considered harm to the plaintiff's health, again in the disjunctive, or psychological harm to the plaintiff's peace of mind in the use and enjoyment of their property as properly recoverable. Affirming a Court of Appeals opinion from the Texas El Paso Courts in 2023, Brewington v. Chesmar Homes, 2023 Westlaw 697-2987 at star 8. So collectively, from 2016 to 2024, you have Justice Boyd writing for unanimous Texas Supreme Court, and then I believe a unanimous Texas Supreme Court in Huen v. Blanchard. I think that there was a concurrence there. But nonetheless, unanimity on the notion of psychological harm being an actionable private nuisance. And that is exactly what we tethered our cause of action to. The legal injury we complain of is one, at this point, that is purely psychological. Our clients are rightfully fearful of what's to be built at the fence line. We had no knowledge of this ever being built until a tax abatement was sought. When we sought to attain the lease was not provided to us. So it's in light, it's a collective assortment of all of these different things. To answer Your Honor's question earlier about where have we played a private nuisance, well, the answer would be everywhere. All of these things matter pursuant to Crosstex, because Crosstex sets forth a litany of a variety of different things that a court must consider, a fact finder must consider when determining whether or not something is a substantial and unreasonable interference with the use and enjoyment of one person's property.
So the appellees are arguing, as I understand it, that there must be a current condition on the property that creates a reasonable fear or apprehension. Do you have a response to what current condition exists on the property that causes your clients to have that reasonable apprehension that rises to the level of the cases that you've cited?
Yes, Your Honor. And Chief Justice, I see my time may be running out. May I be permitted to answer the question?
Of course, certainly.
Thank you. Your Honor, the present condition on the property itself, as we know it, again, this is private property, so we're not able to, you know, we only can see from a bird's eye view at best or just peeping over the fence line. There is presently a Bitcoin facility on that property, as well as a substation. And as the amicus brief in a variety of other counties have now vocalized, the data centers are is hand in hand. It's all in the same bucket of things. Where you have Bitcoin, you have AI data centers. Where you have AI data centers, you have battery energy storage systems. It's not a perfect match, but certainly they are in the same realm of green energy type projects, for lack of a better phrase. So my point is that as it relates to the BESS itself, we just know what we've been told, which is that it was supposed to be constructed in 4Q of 2025 and go into operation in the first Q of 2026. But running in conjunction with that are these other projects that are presently on the disputed piece of property as it stands.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear from you again in rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes, counsel.
Good morning, Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Appellants ask this court to reverse the trial court, create new law which would contradict established law, and hold that their alleged fear and apprehension of nebulous and speculative harms concerning a yet-to-be-built BESS facility can support a viable claim for nuisance. This court should decline appellant's invitation for at least three independent reasons. To start, and as this court has already alluded to, and as a threshold matter, Crosstex clarified that nuisance is not an independent cause of action, it is a legal injury. Because the first amended petition pleads only a negligent private nuisance cause of action, it necessarily fails. As pleaded, the first amended petition also fails for a number of other reasons. To start, the viability of appellant's theory is foreclosed by the Maranatha Temple case. There, the court held that fear and apprehension of a nuisance alone is not enough to create a viable cause of action. Here, appellant's counsel just conceded that the only thing they have is fear and apprehension. They have nothing else. That is their only injury. Because of that, the first amended petition also necessarily fails. And finally, as this court has already alluded to, the first amended petition cannot stand as a matter of law because there is no condition here. For there to be a condition, there must be a physical invasion, and that is clear from the Amini case. Yes, Your Honor?
Do you agree that a prospective nuisance can be enjoined?
I do believe that a prospective nuisance can be enjoined in very specific circumstances, none of which are at play here. So, for example, a prospective nuisance can be enjoined if it's going to be a nuisance per se. This project cannot be a nuisance per se simply because the legal use of land and legal operations of industry in Texas cannot be a nuisance per se, and that's from the Maranatha Temple case. Similarly, there would have to be imminent harm that would be enjoined, and there's no imminent harm here. The first amended petition.
We do know from the record, though, that these types of facilities have in the past caused these types of fires that are very difficult to put out and, in fact, are left to burn, correct?
Correct, yes.
And we know from the record that there is insufficient water and firefighters to actually address that type of a fire, correct?
I would disagree with that contention. Okay. And I would disagree with that contention for the cause or for the reason that the first amended petition was filed on November 26, 2024, and the allegations were that the project would go into operation in Q4 of 2025. That's a year gap. In a year, a lot of things can happen. And as appellant's counsel just conceded, the project still hasn't begun being created. There's no bulldozers on site, there's nothing going on. And so because this is a complex project, because there are a lot of things happening, to say that there's no plan in place, maybe at the time, maybe in November 26, 2024, that was the case, but things can change and projects evolve. And I think that shows that appellants here have a line drawing problem. So I think the line drawing problem is if Exxon is to announce that they plan to build a refinery in 2032, can appellants now, today, sue and say, we don't have any safety information, we don't have any information about what's going to happen, what if this catches on fire? There's a nuisance because I'm afraid of it. And the
But we're already in Q1 of 2026, and 2032 is many years away. That wouldn't be imminent.
Sure.
Under injunction, under the requirements of injunctive relief.
Sure, correct. And I don't think that it's imminent, a year is imminent with regard to the filing of the first amended petition on November 26, 2024, and the allegations that it could, and that's a key phrase that the first amended petition uses, it could go into operation, or it could begin construction in Q4 of 2025. And that didn't happen. And that goes to the speculative nature of the harm that appellants allege, which is simply a lot of bad things could happen, but that's not what a nuisance claim is about. A nuisance claim is not about harms that could happen. A nuisance claim is about, as this court found in Amini, a physical invasion that is actually causing an interference. And here there is no physical invasion. Appellants conceded that. There's no shovel in the ground. They conceded that during the motion to dismiss argument as well. There's been no physical invasion here.
And counsel, if I heard you correctly, the appellants do admit that they have adequately pled a negligent private nuisance claim. They have put you on notice that they pled that.
I think that they have put us on notice, but I think that it's legally deficient for a number of reasons, including what we've outlined in the papers.
Okay.
I think the Maranatha Temple case forecloses their theory entirely, and I think also they failed to allege any sort of invasion that could cause a condition, yes.
Okay.
And to go back to the discussion before regarding the psychological harm, which is what they are claiming is the main injury here, in order to reach that psychological harm component, there must be a condition. Psychological harm is not itself a condition that then creates a nuisance. Because there's been no physical invasion here, and again, Amini cites to a number of different ways that property can be invaded with. It can be light, it can be sound, it can be vibrations, it can be water, but it has to be physical. There's nothing here. And now I would like to turn to the amicus brief, if I could, that was filed at the 11th hour. So as a threshold matter, I think there is good cause under Appellate Rule 11 for this court to disregard that brief. And I think that for two reasons. First, the amici are supposed to be bystanders whose mission is to aid this court and to help the court. I think the amici brief is actually a thinly veiled merits brief that's just filed in support of appellant, and I don't think that's a proper use of an amici brief. And second, the amici brief also raises a host of issues that appellants never raised at the trial court level and they never raised here. So for this court to consider new issues that are being raised by a non-party to this case, I think would be improper. So I think the court should exercise its discretion and under the good cause standard and disregard the amici brief. That being said, there are arguments in that brief that I would like to address in case this court is inclined to review it. So first, and we've touched on this a little bit, the amici brief argues that district courts do have the authority to enjoin prospective nuisances. I do not disagree with that, but that's only under certain circumstances. One is if the nuisance that's being created is a nuisance per se, that's not at play here because it's a legal industry operation in Texas. And the second is if the nuisance that is being built will be built imminently. And that's simply not the case here. The first amended petition was filed on November 26, 2024, and it alleged that the project could go into operation almost a year later in the fourth quarter of 2025. And in fact, the project construction has not started, it is not in operation. Under no reading of the term imminent is a year applicable here. And the amici brief cites to the Friedman case, and the Friedman case actually supports that. So in Friedman, the district court enjoined a prospective nuisance that was a parking lot that was being built. But in that case, the defendants had purchased the home where they planned to build the parking lot, and they had actually begun tearing down the home. So there were active steps taken to create that nuisance. Here, there's nothing. There's no shovel in the ground. There's no active steps that have been taken.
But this was the 91A stage, correct?
Correct.
So we're just looking at pleadings, and so throughout discovery, don't the plaintiffs, underlying plaintiffs, have the ability to go and discover whether there's been a shovel in the ground? We don't know that with certainty.
I agree with you that we're at the 91A stage, and I think that they've completely pleaded themselves out of the imminent standard. Like I said, the first amended petition was filed on November 26, 2024, and they alleged, which if you accept is true, which you must at this stage, the project could be built almost a year later. Under no reading of any standard is a year imminent. And the Friedman case bears that out, as does the Brewington case. In the Brewington case, at issue was dust from construction, and there were fears that that dust was going to be harmful to people, and they sought a prospective injunction to stop that construction, and the court denied it. And the court said that prospective injunctive relief cannot come from speculative and conjectural injuries. And here, that's all we have. We have speculation of what may happen if this facility is built at some point in the future. And those are taken as true, and those are appellant's allegations. Those are not allegations that I'm turning or twisting in any way. Those are allegations in the First Amended petition. In fact, I think Mr. Hernandez conceded that their only alleged harm right now is their fear and apprehension of what is going on here. And so that's completely speculative.
Go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to ask a question about the neighboring property values. And mm-hmm. So we do have, at least addressed in the Amici brief, is the concern of decreasing property values as these best facilities and other types of similar facilities are being constructed. And this seems to be the only avenue for relief, at least to be addressed by the court, because we don't have any legislation that
sure.
addresses this at this time. So can you address the imminent fear of decreasing property values?
Sure, yes. I think that decreased property values is a sufficient injury should there be a condition for a nuisance to be found. And I think that there could potentially be prospective injunctive. It would depend on the facts and a number of things. Here we don't have any allegations of actual decreased property value. We have allegations of, again, fear and apprehension of potential decreased property values. That's the key phrase that I think this court needs to continue to return to, is there are no allegations of actual harm going on here. Their fear and apprehension of harm that may occur. So fear and apprehension of decreased property values, fear and apprehension of runway fires, fear and apprehension of toxic runoff. But that fear and apprehension alone is not sufficient. That's not enough. And the Maranatha Temple case plays that out. And I would like to...
Just to follow up. So is your position that psychological harm is not one that can be recognized in some sense?
No, that is not my position. My position is psychological harm is a compensable component of a negligence claim. It's not in and of itself sufficient to create the condition necessary for a negligence claim. So for a condition to exist, there must be some sort of physical invasion. After that, there's a broad scope, assuming that you can prove kind of the subjective elements of nuisance, which includes substantial and unreasonable, a landowner would be entitled to recover a number of things, including for their psychological harm, including for decreased property value. But in order to get to that point, there must be a condition. And here, there necessarily can't be a condition because there's no physical invasion. And that's this court's decision in a mini. I would like to continue to address the amicus brief, if I may. So the amicus brief cites to Hicks versus Andrews, which is an Eastern District of Texas case. And I think the Hicks versus Andrews case gives this court some good guideposts that it should look at when determining this. So at issue in Hicks versus Andrews, there were actually two motions to dismiss. So on February 28th, 2024, the Eastern District of Texas ruled on a motion to dismiss the first amended complaint, and that can be found at 2024 WL1209222. And at issue there were allegations that were extremely similar to the allegations we have here. Basically, the allegations were defendants had the intention of leasing their land to this Besson Solar Farm, and they were so scared that all this negative stuff was going to happen. They were afraid of, as the court characterized it, future harms that might come from the operation of solar farm and BESS. Because of this, the court found that the first amended complaint failed to state a claim for intentional nuisance, negligent nuisance, and strict liability nuisance. So the court there found allegations that were almost identical, insufficient as a matter of law. Then you turn to the decision they actually cite, which is at 2024 WL5274548, which concerned the second amended complaint. And there, that complaint was filed after construction had begun. There were allegations that there was bulldozing, that there was tree clearing, that there were actual physical invasions, including flooding on plaintiff's land, dead trees and limbs washing up on plaintiff's land, a migration of feral hogs onto plaintiff's land that was causing damage, and actual property value decrease. There, the court actually did find that there was enough to move forward after a 12B6 motion and that it should go into discovery. The first amended petition is nearly identical to the first amended complaint in the Hicks case. And so I think at the end of the day, that is that can and should be dispositive here. The amicus brief also cites to the Texas Health and Safety Code as an avenue through which this court can enjoin prospective injunctive relief. The first amended petition is silent on the Texas Health and Safety Code. It's not at play. It was never raised below. It hasn't been raised by appellants. It's wholly inapplicable here. And then finally, the amicus brief takes the position that there are issues of fact necessarily that need to go into discovery and need to go to a jury. And they selectively quote Crosstech for that proposition. However, Crosstech makes clear that where the allegations or where the facts are undisputed, a court can rule as a matter of law. And that's completely consistent with the Rule 91A motion. And the trial court judge took the allegations in the first amended petition as he must, as undisputed, and found as a matter of law, there simply can't be a private nuisance cause of action here.
Talk to me a little bit about the lack of a hazard plan as could that in and of itself be negligent to start constructing a facility with known, you know, rapid fire risks without a safety plan in place? And that is included in paragraph 7 of the petition.
I don't know that that can in and of itself be negligent. One, because there weren't allegations that construction had started. The first amended petition said that construction was going to start almost a year after it was filed. So to take the allegations at face value, as we must, they're saying there's no fire safety plan pre-construction, and I don't think that's negligent in any way. If the allegations were different, let's say, and they were to say construction has started, there's no fire safety plan, nobody knows what's going on, I think there would be a better case. But
here you have a county that lacks sufficient resources to address that type of a fire, so wouldn't that require that kind of 1 to 2 year lead time to sufficiently prepare a plan to get it in place to ensure that there's enough people to address the fire, that there's enough water to address the fire if and when the construction begins?
I understand your concerns, and it's my understanding that the creator of the BEST facility works hand in hand with local municipalities to do that, to prepare for these things. So I wouldn't be surprised. I can't tell you definitely that that has been going on, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is. Right. And again, the first amended petition doesn't allege anything to the contrary. It alleges that there's no plans, but it also alleges that there's been no construction and there is no construction for at least a year from the date of filing. So I think that that's an issue.
You don't think the lack of a plan is enough of a shovel in the ground in terms of the preparations for the construction?
I do not, no. I don't think that's enough. And I welcome the court's additional questions, if it has any.
Anything further, Justice Theofanis?
Just one question. Opposing counsel brought up the idea that there were these steps that had been made, sort of not physical invasion, but there were other sort of more like administrative steps that had already been made toward the project. Is that not something that we can look at in making our determination?
I would think, as far as a negligent private nuisance cause of action goes, it's not. I think that to create a condition, there has to be some sort of physical invasion, and I think the Amini case bears that out. I think the Amini case, and I think the Hicks case also shows that too. The difference between the first amended complaint, where there was nothing, there were just kind of these broad plans and fears and apprehension, and then you have the second amended complaint where there were sticks washing up, there were feral hogs, there was a decrease in property value. I think you need that physical invasion component to create the condition for the nuisance.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right. Let's hear from the appellants in rebuttal. You may proceed.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Your Honor, and thank you, opposing counsel. If there had to be a physical invasion to constitute an actionable nuisance, the unanimous Texas Supreme Court in 2016, who wrote a treatise essentially on private nuisance, could have exactly stated that. If there had to be a physical invasion, Justice Busby could have stated that. Nowhere in Texas jurisprudence, except for a 1997 Houston Court of Appeals non-binding, non-authoritative decision, is there a notion of a physical shovel in the ground needing to be put in place. The argument is pure conjecture, not supported by Texas law, certainly not supported by binding Texas law, certainly not supported by 21st century Texas law. Maybe that was the case at once upon a time, but it is not the case today for the reasons I stated at the forefront. Addressing a few points from opposing counsel's recitation of the arguments in the amici brief, so I want to highlight for the court that, again, we are at the Rule 91A stage. The question of, is there a basis in law or is there a basis in fact? The question here is there a basis in law? And I've heard arguments throughout this case that because there is not some imminence component, Well, I want to raise a couple of points there. It was the county commissioner, and this is pled in our pleadings, whose land is this best facility is going to be on, who didn't tell anybody. In 2022, this man and his family signed the lease and yet never told a soul, though it was his legal obligation as a county commissioner to do so. Pardon me, but my clients rightfully fear, concern that they're not being told everything that's coming, leaving us to do what? Climb the fence and risk trespass just to figure out if there's a shovel in the ground? We're stuck in a black box, and the last place of refuge is this honorable court. Our own district court kicked us to the curb and slapped us with $50,000 worth of attorney's fees simply for asking. To state it another way would to be a disservice to the facts of this case. These honorable people have gone to the Capitol seeking relief, talked to their representatives seeking relief, gone to administrative agencies seeking relief. Door shut, door shut, door shut, door shut. The reason we had to sue our neighbor is, well, because our neighbor didn't tell us anything and put a best facility into place asking for the county to do so. Again, if a shovel in the ground was a necessary component to have an actionable private nuisance claim, the Texas Supreme Court would have said that in the two treatises. We're talking 70 pages worth of nuisance law in two Supreme Court opinions. Never once is that assertion made. That assertion is only made, again, by a non-binding, non-authoritative Houston Court of Appeals opinion from 1997, the 20th century, well before best technology, at least as it's known to the modern public, was ever brought to light, was ever brought to our cognition. This is a new realm. We can't put old wine into new wineskins. We are simply in a place where old, outdated nuisance law that is cited by the appellees throughout this case cannot carry the day, especially when the Texas Supreme Court has spoken. We live in a system of stare decisis. We live in a system of jurisprudence. We have these things for a reason. There's a reason that we tethered our case to Crosstex, because we did what the law permitted us to do, and instead we got the door shut in our face. We're seeking this honorable court's ruling in our favor, as are the amicus, all these other parties who were pleading, literally pleading and praying at this point for someone to hear us out. We are by no means trying to stretch the law. This is an honest and good faith application of the law as it stands, not only for the Fayette County residents, not only for Van Zandt County residents, not only for Gillespie County residents, not only for Camp Mystic, Kerr County residents. This is an issue of Texas law. This is an issue that is placed at this honorable court's feet to now hear our pleadings and hear our prayer for relief that is not a stretching of the law, but a good faith, honest in application. So to summarize, we believe that the case law as it stands today, Texas Supreme Court has spoken, and until they speak otherwise, this honorable court must follow that decision in stare decisis mandates that we do so. We just ask for our day in court. We don't ask for a ruling on the facts. We just want to be able to present our case to a panel of our peers to be able for them to determine, as a matter of fact, not as a matter of law, whether or not a best facility at the fence line is a nuisance. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Thank you both counsels very much for the well-presented case. This case will be submitted and the court will stand in recess. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good seeing you too. Thank you. It was fun getting in here.
Yeah. Nice to meet you, man.
Thank you.